Okay, welcome in to another edition of That's
So Cincinnati.
Phil was right on it today. Phil Didion, executive producer, along with my co-host, Sherry Coolidge, Jason Williams. We're back. Episode 44. I got it right that time. Exciting. Listenership continues on. Thanks so much. Continues to go up and up and up. Can't thank everyone enough for that. This is so fun. We're coming up on a year, Labor Day, a year of doing this. And you guys, ladies, gentlemen, boys and girls are all embracing this. So thank you. Tell your friends, share on Facebook. It's all about Cincinnati. It's politics, current events, little food, little sports, little entertainment.
I love when we go outside the box.
Yeah, no, we're so and our politics. Listeners do too. So thank you, everyone. Let's go to politics in our first segment here. First of all, let me. We have Gwen McFarland, the Hamilton County Democratic Party chairwoman, as our special guest today. So we're looking forward to having Gwen in. Scott Wortman, our regional politics reporter and county reporter, just did a really nice profile on her that ran in this past Sunday's paper, and then also was posted on Cincinnati.com last week. So looking forward. She has a really unique story in her rise in politics. So looking forward to catching up with Gwen. I always enjoy talking with her, so she'll be in here in a little bit. But first, let's shift to our old favorite, our old go-to political thing, and there's always something there to talk about, and that would be Cincinnati City Hall. And no one better to talk about that than our Cincinnati City Hall reporter, Sherry Coolidge. Sherry, we got a couple things. You got a story this week on council attendance, and also the city's marijuana law is coming up here this week too. So let's talk about council attendance first. Give us a rundown. You looked at council attendance last year for a piece in what, December, and then you did it again here for the first half of this year. And what did you find?
Well, honestly, you know, the story this summer, because you typically do it at the big benchmarks a year. Mm-hmm. I didn't really think I'd be doing it right now. But, you know, we had a big issue at the beginning of June. There was a night meeting and three members were not present, which is a lot to not show up. And they couldn't get any work done. And I'll tell you what, the mayor who runs the meetings, although he doesn't vote, he was pretty annoyed. And so was the budget director, David Mann.
So this was mid-June?
Right in the middle of the budget.
Right in the middle of the budget, and it was a night meeting. Sherry, in this critical meeting, who wasn't there that night?
Amy Murray, Wendell Young, and Tamaya Dennard. Only Amy responded about, you know, where she was, and she was out of state, actually, at a poverty summit.
I think the interesting thing on this is that the night meetings were an effort pushed by Tamaya Dennard, the first-term Democrat councilwoman, who really I thought was a great idea, pushed for night meetings to be mixed in. Usually council meetings are on Wednesday afternoons, and I praised her for it, and yet she missed what's been the most critical night meeting so far since council voted to allow to have a periodic night meeting. It's overall, it's frustrating to see the amount of folks missing meetings. And
this is what gets me the most is the council rules say, it's so hard to wrap your head around. The council rules, which is what guides them, say you have to attend all the meetings unless you have a really good excuse. But in practice, if you say you're not going to be there, you don't have to say why. And then you say, and then you're just automatically excused, which is always like the hardest words to like write in the story. Are they excused? Are they absent? Like, but they call the roll and they're excused, and then there's no repercussions for that.
And you would think that the basic, let's be honest here, that being a member of Cincinnati City Council, you're usually on a couple, at least what, two committees, right? At least.
Yes,
typically.
Definitely. Yes.
So two to three committees, and that's most of those usually only meet every other week. And then you have for 10 months of the year, you have a Wednesday full council meeting. So for 10 months of the year, you really have maybe three meetings a week that are really of your between committee and council. So there are council meetings. There's really nothing even that mandates, absolutely really mandates you even have to show up for those things. And yet we're paying our council members $65,000 a year, full health benefits, full pension. They have a salary and benefits allotment to hire a staff. Most of them have at least two aides per office. And this is my take on it, Sherry. I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but something's got to change here. I question the commitment from this council, and we have many, many times on this podcast. And you got to wonder, where do they even care?
Yeah, you're putting me on the spot. But here, let me tell you, this is kind of my takeaway from it, which is this is the only place where you're doing the city's business actually in public, because these people do argue they work very hard. Of course, you have to take off sometimes, and that's understandable. But to miss, several meetings, three total for like the first 6 months of this year and then the prior year, this is where you get to show the public exactly what you're doing.
Yep,
you might be working exactly hard other times, but that's not something that the public can actually see and make some decisions for themselves, have these public conversations. I mean, that's why I go, because I want to hear the public conversations and what goes into the decision making.
At the very least, you can show up for the public meeting portion of your job to do the public's, to vote on the public's behalf what you were elected to do. Anything else you want to add on that topic, or you want to move on?
We can move on. Although I guess, I will go back. I mean, sometimes, think about your college classes. Like, part of your grade was attendance, right?
Yeah.
Pretty much Carl looks for me every morning. I have to be somewhere working. And I think, I think a lot of people, if you saw on social the reaction to that, that's what people were saying.
Yeah. Where's the accountability on that? But we'll look forward to you staying on top of that. And I know you're watching and, doing basic journalism 101, and that's watchdog work, and no one does it better in my opinion in Ohio than you do. So keep up the great work on that. Let's shift gears. Let's bring in Gwen McFarland as our special guest. All right, guest time here on the TSC. I don't know. I'm going to introduce our guest today, which we already said in our opening segment, but I'm going to introduce her as one of my favorite people in politics, and that's Gwen McFarland, the chairwoman of the Hamilton County Democratic Party and also longtime trustee of Springfield Township. Gwen, thanks for joining Sherry and I. It's really a pleasure to have you here.
It's a pleasure to be here with both of you. You're one of my favorites both. Sherry and I go way, way back as well. And so this is really a great opportunity.
And I got to have a little fun with this. So when you come upstairs to 19th floor here and you walk in the room in the studio, your phone says you have arrived. And not just, as Sherry said, I think you should put that on your phone no matter where you go, where you arrived, which maybe you do. Because in more ways than one, you have arrived. Politics, life, your career. So I just thought that was a funny, cool
good
thing.
Moment,
so,
yeah.
It was a fantastic moment. And it was even more fantastic because it's never mattered when it does that, but for some reason it matters a lot today because I have.
and speaking, we'll jump right in. And speaking of that, one of the things you have arrived on is coming up on a year almost that you've been the chairwoman of the county party.
Yes.
That was a new challenge for you after you're in your 25th year as a trustee, right, in Springfield Township?
24th, almost 25th. Yes.
You added the challenge and the what I think is one of the most thankless jobs in politics, especially on the Democratic side in this town, mm-hmm. where it's a you get paid exactly $0 to do it.
That's true. I didn't do it for the money.
You work your butt off to do it. What was the you know, after all those years as a trustee involved in Democratic politics behind the scenes, what was the story behind you becoming the chairwoman of the party, and who convinced you to do it, and what was sort of that epiphany for you to do it?
Well, Jason, first of all, and Sherry, I didn't just wake up that morning and say, I'm going to be a chair of the Democratic Party. It wasn't something that I woke up on and said a prayer on or anything. It happened, and it happened because at some point, and Tim Burke had been sharing for about a year or two that he was ready to transition and change and move on. Mm-hmm. And so they had been looking for individuals to take his place. And it was getting down to the wire. And so I can't recall who really said something to me, but Tim kept telling me, Gwen, remember, this is a thankless job. And I kept sharing with Tim that I'm going to make it a thankful job if I decide to do this.
Was he trying to convince you, though? Because that doesn't seem like the best argument.
Great sales pitch, Tim.
It was a great sales pitch. But there were quite a few people that kept calling me and saying, you need to make a decision. We think you would be the person. And because of the experience and expertise that you bring and the knowledge and that you are fair and you have integrity, you know, all those fluffy words. Mm-hmm. And for me, I said, well, you know, I'd like to do it, but let's think about a team. Maybe I'd do it with a co-chair. And so I called Connie Pillage, mm-hmm. and I said, Connie, what do you think? Let's step out on this. What do you think? We'll step out on faith. Connie said, let's do it. And I'd worked with Connie in the past when she was at the State House, and she and I had similar views, and I thought it would be kind of a neat thing to do. Mm-hmm. So based on the continuation of folks suggesting that I do it, then Connie and I threw our hats in and said, we're going to do this. So it wasn't, Jason, something I just woke up and said, this is what I'm going to do. So when I took the step, we went into it just as if you were going into a campaign, you know. Yep. I knew I wasn't in it for the money. I was in it to win it if I was going to step forward like that. And we stepped forward, and we actually made phone calls and kind of shared with individuals that we were considering this and wanted their support. And so when the day of the vote occurred, we won. We had the support of the majority of the executive committee and the central committee folks. Mm-hmm. So it was based on, I think it was a great combination with Connie and I. And there were other folks who said, you know, well, we've never had a woman doing this. And I said, well, it's about time, you know. So I stepped to that, and I did say amen to that. Yeah. So that's how I got involved and got to that point. Yes.
It is a big job. In today's world, things are very fast moving. It's even different than, you know, I can remember when I covered the county, it's how I know you from the Tax mm-hmm. Levy Review Committee. Mm-hmm. But that was almost pre-social media. And you would go, like, you know, you had your Board of Elections meetings mm-hmm. and then people writing stories, but it seemed slower paced. And now you're just keeping up with the news all the time, and you don't know what's going to come out every moment, really.
Absolutely. Every minute, every moment, every second. And, you know, some time ago, I often wondered who I was and why I got to be where I was in my professional career. And it dawned on me that my life has been one where I function as a change agent. I like to come into a system, or especially if I was working in a hospital, a unit that they said could never survive, and they were going to have to close it down. And I'd say, well, let's evaluate this.
Your career was nursing.
It was nursing, yes. Yep. And so I'm used to impromptu having to make decisions quickly, critically, and then continue to research and move from there. So I found that in my DNA, there is something that says you're a change agent.
Yeah.
And that's how I can make those different paradigm shifts. But this one is a quicker pace as well. But I look forward to that.
I think we should say, so it was a co-chair job, but now... It's not true.
It's a chair job. Basically, because Connie got this awesome, amazing opportunity to go to Washington. Mm-hmm. And we tried to keep it kind of undercover, you know, because I was my whole goal was to win in 2018. I didn't want any distractions. I wanted to stay focused on winning. And because I've been involved with a coordinated campaign since 2015. So I knew that we had to continue to work. Mm-hmm. So she eased out and I stayed in. And it's just been a really neat opportunity for me. And I don't see it from my perspective. I look at obstacles as opportunities. And for me, this has been an opportunity, not an obstacle.
You know, you talk about being a change agent. I think that's a great phrase for you. And I think back to you've been going back 24, almost 25 years when you jumped into mm-hmm. politics, when you ran for office. You were running in a Republican township, and to this day is still the majority of the trustees are Republicans.
Yes.
And you have been the lone Democrat on the Board of Trustees in Springfield Township. Can you take us back to, well, first of all, the one thing I really have a lot of respect for you about is that you are someone who works, and I call it old school, but I think we need to get back to this, is that you are someone who works well across the aisle. You've got a part, you're in a party, and both parties have these divides, so you have to manage the divides in your own party, but then in your role as Springfield Township Trustee, you've always had to work to get anything done with the Republicans, and
absolutely.
You've done that masterfully.
Absolutely.
Has that always been, where did that come from? Just wanting to, work with people that aren't, share the same values and political beliefs as you?
Well, a lot of it, I believe, and, because of my medical background, you'll hear me use this term, is it has to be in my DNA. And plus, I was raised in communities that were mixed, and I was always a minority. Mm-hmm. And I used to wonder, okay, I'm a minority, but am I a minority as a gender person because I'm a female? Am I a minority because I'm African American? I'm brown. Am I a minority because of my political party? Mm-hmm. And when I decided to run back and for trustee, all three of those strikes were against me. Mm. And I couldn't determine and evaluate which one was the highest priority as far as being throwing roadblocks in my pathway. Mm-hmm. And since I knew that they all were, in a way, I just stepped forward and stepped out on faith and went out and worked. And it was amazing, Jason, because all three were roadblocks, I knew that I had to strategically look at how I was going to present myself. Mm-hmm. So I did the norm. I didn't put my face on anything. And
in
the campaigns.
Yep.
Not until I finally won.
Yep.
And
started building name ID. And
exactly. Yeah. And my background, my last name is McFarland, so I figured, okay, my signs will be green, mm-hmm. and that will reflect my Irish background somewhat. And so that had a lot to do with helping me cross over that bridge.
Yep. Have you kept them green all these years?
I've kept them green all these years.
And I think we should let our listeners know that this is at the end of the year, you will leave the Board of Trustees after, 25 years essentially at that point?
Yes.
Because you have gone on to the Board of Elections now as the chairwoman of the party, and the law says you can't be in elected office and also be on the Board of Elections. So you've taken on a new challenge, and yet you're leaving behind a quarter century of work in the township. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
I want to stay on. I know I'm jumping around a little bit, but going back to when you got in politics, you had some really great, great mentors and great influencers that help you get your start and get going. One of those was Marion Spencer.
Yes, absolutely.
Iconic civil rights leader and politician here in Greater Cincinnati. How did you get connected with her, and how did you work on her campaign? Is that how you started? Was that your first campaign that you got involved?
That was my. Well, I did some work at a state level, but coming home and into Cincinnati, her campaign was the very first campaign I really took a leadership role in and mm-hmm. worked on. There were so many fabulous individuals that I worked with during that time, but Marion was very inspiring for me. I looked at her as a mentor, and she really engaged me and embraced me and helped teach me from a logistical aspect how important good government was and how critical it was to have some integrity and honesty and be able to work with people across the table.
Yep.
And I would sit with her at the table. You know, when you sit at a table with an influential person like that, you best learn how to listen. Mm-hmm. And I've always been a listener. And she would share, the struggles that she went through as a woman and as an African-American, and how she fought for civil rights for all people. And I would listen to her. And when she, as we were working in her campaign, she always just kind of took me aside and would give me words of advice. She, and as she called her husband, Daddy, Daddy, they'd both get me together and talk about, how critical it was to be a political leader that has dignity, that respects all people, no matter who they are. So I learned all that as well in nursing. You cannot be judgmental in yep. nursing. You have to. I was always taught, look through the person and see the beauty in them.
Yep.
And that sort of is how I evolved, because I was taught that as well. But working with Marion was just so amazing. When we worked on her campaign, we had to do a lot of, we learned that we had to do a lot of work to make sure people could see her as a woman and mm-hmm. as a very intelligent person and as a civil rights advocate. So I worked with great people. Like, I worked some with Judge Nadine. She helped with the campaign a little bit. Brewster Rhodes and Roxanne Qualls. Mm-hmm. And we were all great people working with her. We were just people.
Yep.
Never dreaming that our paths would continue to crisscross as we evolved as political figures as well.
Well, so. I mean, what a great mentor. And I have an extra respect for Marion Spencer, as she's from my hometown, Gallipolis, Ohio, small town, Appalachia. And for her to come out of our little tiny river, Ohio River town, is an honor. And it's an honor to say that I'm from the same hometown as her. And when you're telling me about reaching across the aisle and good government, there couldn't have been a better person to learn from than her, and treating people with respect and dignity. You were so blessed to have.
I'm that was so blessed
when you were getting your start in politics.
And I didn't know that's where you started either. So I'm learning something about you as well, and your viewers.
Do you still keep in touch with Marion?
Yes, I do. In fact, I haven't seen her really probably in about a year. Mm-hmm. But I know that she's having some health issues.
Yeah.
And just keeping her, asking everyone to keep her in their prayers.
Yeah.
Because she's a dynamic woman, a dynamic leader, and a trailblazer.
And she is. And if you're doing anything in the Democratic Party and like interviewing people or, talking about things in the past, she comes up as the thread of everything.
Really?
And just like hearing all of those stories over time has been amazing.
Yes. Yes.
We're talking about small town, and I think in my small town, you think of the country. And so this is my segue into, I have to ask you about it because I love the story. You grew up on a farm in Claremont County. And I remember when you and I sat down back in, I think it was January or February, and we talked about it. And I was so intrigued by your personal story of growing up on a farm in Claremont County. talk a little bit about that, and then just, you know, I know you've learned values or things that you learned working on the farm. You still carry through your life to this day. What was a day like in
a day like for
you
us,
as a young girl growing up on the farm?
Well, it was get up early in the morning, work, go to bed. Then when I went to school, it was get up early in the morning, get your work done, go to school. We had to walk a lane. There was a lane that was about a mile and a half, maybe two, from where our house was located to the main road to get on the school bus, mm-hmm. my brother and I. And then we'd get off, go to school and come home from school and do the work on the farm, do our homework first, and then do the work on the farm. Mm-hmm. It never seemed like a big deal. It was just part of living on a farm. You know, I just, there were a lot of fun things we did and learned a lot. My father and mother talked about how critical it was to do the right thing. And even up to this day, do the right thing. Don't do anything to bring shame on your family.
Yeah.
And the big thing was never tell a lie, because if you do, you'll go to hell. So I was always afraid and didn't want to go there, yeah. you know, so yeah. I always made sure.
I hear you.
I remember once I tried to tell a little story and it backfired on me, and that's when I got a big whooping for that. So I knew that was almost near going the other way, so I never did that again.
And your dad was a full-time farmer, right?
Yes, we were full-time.
Tobacco,
yes. We had, the major product was tobacco, mm-hmm. and I don't know if you know anything about tobacco.
I do.
Okay.
Unfortunately, thinking about hot days of hanging tobacco on the third story of a barn with wasps
right.
flying around and sweat pouring down. But yeah, and
absolutely.
Yeah.
You are
you
so
know,
on
you know
it.
The language
You're so
I'm speaking
it.
Right now. So
on it. And for me, the most, if I was to think back of the most gross thing of that whole thing was the tobacco worms.
Oh, yes. Those big green
things.
Fat
yes.
worms.
Right.
Oh.
So, and you always wanted to make sure they didn't fall off, you know.
Yes.
From the, so we have a lot in common. A lot of people, you know, people say, well, I didn't know you, that was your, since this article came out, they
yeah.
didn't know that about
yeah.
me. And it was just like, it was a normal thing. You know, you worked hard and we sold other products. We had beef and pork, and my mother did. We had chicken and eggs and
yeah.
took eggs to the Finley Street Market at that time. And so it was just a normal, what I thought and still believe was a normal life of living on a farm and being raised on a farm.
Now, in the farm, and folks, like if they're a listener, Scott Wortman, our regional and county political reporter, did a really nice piece on Gwen that ran on Cincinnati.com last week, or still there, obviously, and ran in Sunday paper. So definitely go check that out to learn more about Gwen and her life story and what she's doing in politics. The family farm, that's no longer in the family, right? You guys...
No, my parents sold the farm when the tobacco market started dropping.
Okay.
And the tobacco was the major thing, you know, it was the major source of income for us. And then they moved, sold the farm and moved into Batavia.
Yeah.
But I have family that still lives in Felicity.
Okay.
And they have
That's
a lot
right.
of
the farm was in Felicity.
Right.
Yep.
Yes. So he's the only one that's left that lives there. And a lot of his acres, he had multiple acres, and a lot of it is weed, you know, because he has not done much, because his kids grew up and they didn't want to be farmers. So
yeah.
he still stayed there, you know, the typical
gotcha.
Story.
Gotcha. I want to shift back to politics,
mm-hmm.
and I know I'm jumping around a little bit, but you know, we talked about your experience and how when Marion Spencer really, you know, really, really helped instill in you about, you know, working across the aisle. You come into this chair position at a really interesting time in politics. I don't know what other word to say other than interesting, the post 2016 world of politics,
mm-hmm.
where, intra party battles are just as intense, if not more, than inter-party battles. How have you been able to manage, and this was going on before you became the chair, how have you been able to manage that? And I know people will say the progressives and the, or the urbanists and the establishment or the, you know, normal Democrat, whatever people say, but how have you been able to manage that, those dynamics?
My goal coming into the party as the chair was to build unity, mm-hmm. and understanding all of those dynamics was part of that as well. And learning how to and continue to develop the party, but also respecting each person where they were coming from, because this is a democracy. Mm-hmm. And for me, the one thing that was questionable was, if you're going to build unity, how do you do that? Mm-hmm. So because the Democratic Party is a party that welcomes all people, there's a lot of diversity. And so one of my goals after the election in 2018, and I think I shared this at some point, was that I wanted to make sure that we took care of winning. And so what I did was made sure that we created that hub, which was part of the unity goal, at the headquarters, and not had it fragmented, you know, yeah. in too many different directions, and that we stayed engaged in and mindset of doing the best that we could and winning, because it was about winning. So then after the election and we got through the holidays and everything, I said, well, I've got to move on and continue to celebrate our diversity. And so I put together a workshop, a training, and hired a consultant to come in. Mm-hmm. And the consultant, we had a full day on a Saturday, almost most of that day. We had almost 200 people there. We talked about celebrating our diversity, male, female, sexual orientation.
Yeah. All you and I have talked about, yeah.
Yes. And that helped continue to bridge that gap and mm-hmm. build unity. And it's still an ongoing process because, yeah. As you are aware, the party is never going to be 100% the way you want it to be. But yeah. if you can work together as a team, and teamwork has always been my forte,
yep.
you know, and I like to say this, and this is one of my favorite accolades: teamwork makes the dream work. And so that is basically my the symbol of who I am.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what your differences are. And it reflects as well back on my professional career, being able to work with all people and not judging them, you know, but look at them as human beings.
Do you I know you have a primary coming up for the sheriff's race next year between incumbent Jim Neal and challenger Charmaine McGuffey. Mm-hmm. I've had a few Democrats suggest to me like that maybe this is the start of seeing more, you know, so-called whatever, you know, I know people call them, you know, urbanists or progressives. So, you know, folks that are in sort of the progressive wing of the party, and that mm-hmm. would be, I think people would consider Charmaine in that out of that realm. I've had some people say, like, what you've seen at City Hall, where progressives have kind of, you know, really kind of gained a majority, that you may start to now, that Charmaine may be starting a trend where that is now going to start happening in the county. What have you been hearing talks about that? Do you think there'll be more, more primary challengers in the Democratic Party for countywide offices in the near future?
There may be, and you have to expect that because yeah. it's a democracy. And the thing that's critically important is that whatever that nominating process is, which we have a nominating process in progress now, that it's open, mm-hmm. that it's transparent, and that it's fair. And anyone that wants to take that plunge should be allowed to do that. But then the nominating process and the nominating committee will make the final decision. Yep. But you've got to give individuals that opportunity to attempt to run for an office no matter what. Because, you know, Jason, just like I've been a trustee for 24 years, it's time sometimes to give your baton over to someone else. And if you're going to bring in and engage more individuals into your party that think like you and that are operating in the moment presently and not yesterday, but operating today and also looking forward to the future, then you're going to have those opportunities. And so my biggest concern, and I will continue to do this and say this, is that whatever we do, however we move, is going to be in a fair, open, transparent, and with respect and dignity for those individuals that are running.
And I know this is this will be up to committees and the entire leadership of the party. Do you, but from your vantage point, or do you think the party is planning on endorsing in the sheriff's race?
That will be left up to the committee.
Okay.
That will be up to the nominating committee. All of the candidates will be interviewed. And then whatever the nominating committee's recommendation is goes to the full committee. And from there, the decision will be made.
One other thing I want to ask you about, you know, sticking with that kind of theme of unity and trying to bring the party together. This was back, in March, in the wake of the City Hall's, you know, open records text message case. You put out a release critical of, or I mean, you said this was unacceptable. I'm paraphrasing, but you said this should not have happened, that the breaking of open meetings law should not have happened. You were also critical of Judge Robert Ruhlman, but that's beside the point. And then soon after that, there you were on the front row at city council meeting. And then I talked to you, and I remember I talked to you, and to me that, will we see more? Will we see you doing that more?
That's not going to. I did that because I really wanted to see how the city council members and how the city council decisions were made, and for me to be able to get a better grasp and understand much more deeply how the system works as far as the city council, even commissioner's offices. So I did that, and I would probably do it again, you know.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that at that time, too.
But it had nothing to do with who was there, but it had everything to do with helping me get a deeper understanding of how those systems function.
Yeah.
As the chair, I think that's important.
But I also think that you've set you really made a statement in setting a standard that you're not gonna, and I know you're not there to babysit.
No,
your candidates or your endorsed elected officials. But not even saying anything, what you've done in your career is about unity. Your career is about trying to find common ground, even with people you disagree with, and that you've made a statement about that just by the work that you've done, and without even having to say anything at all. Is that what you're hoping, that the party will follow, the party being elected officials, and the party will follow that lead?
I believe that our elected officials already have one up on understanding how important it is to demonstrate integrity, and I want to support them in that way, because that's how I feel, and that's what I believe, and everybody knows that. I mean, I'm not just saying
city council. I'm saying
but all
Hamilton County Democratic
leaders.
So
because from my perspective, we're talking about good government and working to be in there to work for the people, and no matter what your elected position is, and that was how I felt about my own, and wanting to be accessible, and also being able to get a deeper understanding of what the issues are. And so what better way to do that than to go there, to be there?
Is it blow you away that we were at 2020 seems to be in full swing?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
And not just locally, nationally, locally, on the state level. I mean, we are in full 2020 mode, right?
2020, and I'm like, wait a minute, this is 2019. We have work to do for 2019, and I keep focusing on the importance of we got to work for 2019. And then on December the 30th or 31st, then we swing in, you know, to get it ready for 2020.
Right.
But it seems like it to me, Jason. Absolutely. It's almost, and we cannot allow, I'm not going to allow our voters and our constituents to forget that we have races that are going to be on the ballot this year in 2019. Great races.
A lot of suburban trustee races.
Yes.
Suburban mayoral races, suburban, or even school board races across the region.
Across the region, absolutely.
And as I say, Gwen, to everyone who asks me, my passion is local politics. I know that's your passion as well. Mm-hmm. Is that these are folks who are making the everyday decisions that really affect people's everyday lives. Your water rates, your sewer rates, whether your trash gets picked up, your potholes get filled. So these, basic government.
Exactly. Roads are, all of that. Yes.
So basic government services that really affect our lives every day, these are made at almost exclusively at the local level and by the trustees and by council members. And so, yeah, I'm glad you said that
yes,
we shouldn't forget about for those folks who live in those areas where there are elections, the 2019 election, because it's just as important in some ways to some people's lives as
very important. It's
2020 election.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And the thing that I've always said, and I say this every chance, every opportunity that I get, we have to take care of our local universe first.
Mm-hmm.
We have to take care of our local candidates first, because the local candidates are the driving force that could help whomever is running at the top anyway. So it's not where this trickle down, it comes from the top down. It comes from down here at our local level and moves up. And that's something that I adamantly believe in.
And these trustees roles and even some of the kind of the roles that don't get headlines a lot, like a county treasurer or a county mm-hmm. recorder, roles like that. These are places where folks who want to serve and are even younger potentially, and these are places where the party can build a bench to maybe someday this person goes on to run for state attorney general or governor or Congress or whatever. So.
And that's always been my philosophy. And that was something that even when I was working with Marion's campaign, we talked about bringing in, as you bring in new people, there are lots of opportunities for running in elected positions, not just in the city of Cincinnati or not just at the county level,
yep.
but in the municipalities, in the villages. And those individuals begin to develop the knowledge and the ability to critically think regarding what's going to be happening further down the road. So I believe in working in the present, and then also keeping an eye on the future.
Yep.
And if you're going to bring in new individuals and recruit candidates, you look at where their strengths are. And I always say, when people say, well, I want to run for city council even today, I said, well, if you're coming from Glendale, what about trying your own community? I had that opportunity.
Yep.
And
you did.
I did. And I chose not to come into the city of Cincinnati. I chose to stay in my community and make a difference. And from there, you move forward.
And we didn't touch on that earlier, but you're right. And it's something that Scott touched on in his feature on you, was that you had that same pull. You had people recommending, like, you wanted to get into politics, and you had some people recommend, well, if you're a Democrat, you need to move into the city. And you said, no, I'm going to stay. I love my community. You're raising your children there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you stayed, and here you are almost 25 years later as an elected official. Are you the longest tenured running trustee currently, or? I know you have trustee.
Let me think. Joe may be a step ahead of me. Joe's one step ahead of me.
Joe Honerlaw?
Yes.
Yeah.
Joe Honerlaw. And then Joe was there first, pretty sure. Yes. And then I came right behind him.
Gotcha.
So we're pretty much neck and neck
working
together.
Well, congratulations on, almost a quarter century as a trustee and almost a year into being the chairwoman of the local party. And, you had great success in 2018 with your judicial races, and I'm trying. There was another big race. Had, what am I forgetting about?
We had the judicial races. Then we also carried our Hamilton County Democratic Party carried all of the Democratic candidates who were running.
Yes.
So we carried not only at the local level, but at the state level and at the federal level as well.
Yep.
So we carried that.
And, and Jessica Miranda flipped the seat in Northeast Hamilton County.
Stephanie Dumas. And quite frankly, AFTAB did a great job, you know. But there were things that we learned from every race, and and the way the gerrymandering is at the present, you know, the districts 1 and 2, it's going to be very challenging to be able to shift.
I know that. And that race is, as we talked about, 2020 is in full swing. Mm-hmm. You mentioned AFTAB, and before we jump out of this, I think it's kind of now becoming more clear that AFTAB's role, even though he lost, he did a lot to help the down ticket races, and the energy that came around him and the money that came around him, and credit to him because he's a prolific fundraiser, helped to really kind of elevate the entire party. And so even though he didn't win, and we call it the AFTAB effect.
Yes.
A lot of other people did. And mm-hmm. And again, you were right there at the top of that and helping to lead the way. So congrats again on all the successes that you had. And thank you so much for coming in here. It's great to see you. And
it's great to be seen. Thank you so much. And I really thank you. And you know, I also have to, I'm used to working with all constituents. And one of the things that I'd like to take away as well, and when I came on as the chairperson, I do have to say that Alex did reach out, and we both agreed that we have to advocate and will advocate no matter what for our parties, but we will always respect each other.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because Alex, I know Alex and Tim Burke, your predecessor, had a very cordial relationship. You battle and you fight when you're in between the lines, and then when the game's over, you shake hands and say good game, and mm-hmm. you move on, and nobody, there's no personal yuckiness going on there. Yeah. And I'm seeing that same thing happen. And I know Alex had a nice quote about you in Scott's piece, and
yes.
I'm seeing that continuing on. That's really, it's great to see.
It's what it's supposed to be. We talk about good government, and like the government in Washington, it's not the way we are here. And so we will always have civility and respect each other. Yep. We may not agree, because you're always going to have some disagreements, but we can agree that we can disagree.
Absolutely. And we say Alex Ciontafulu is the Hamilton County Republican Party chairman, yes. who we had on a few weeks ago. So it's good to have both of the party leaders here in a few weeks. So
thank you.
Thanks again.
Thank you for your balanced newscasting, and thank you for the great work that you do as well as a journalist.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks to Gwen. Great story. Really, really love the story about her growing up on a farm in Claremont County, and the values that she learned there, and how that's taken her through her professional and political life and personal life even too. Just the values of work ethic and what her parents taught her, and the things that she did on the farm with her brothers, and just the work they did. So thanks again to Gwen. Let's shift. This is the fun segment of the show. Not that we haven't been having fun.
I always have fun when I'm hanging out with you on the podcast.
Absolutely. This project, so I think this is what, your 9th episode, Sherry, and we're having a lot of fun. As I said, sounds to me like listeners are having fun too, because more and more are joining. So thanks again. If this is your first episode, this is the time when we go back to the title of our podcast. This is where we have the
So Cincinnati
moment of the week, brought to you by Cincinnati.com. Sherry, what do you got for us?
Mine involves food. You could tell
Imagine
it's
that.
Summer. You could tell it's summer. It's like
we love our food here on the TSC.
And it also, going back to our last conversation, involves a bus. I went to the FC Cincinnati game on Saturday night, and you know the traffic around stadium. Well, no, I wouldn't say horrendous compared to like other cities when you're leaving stadiums, but still not great. You don't want to weave out of a parking garage. I did the whole park downtown thing, and I took a bus. So I ended up on a bus from uptown to downtown at 10:22 because you know this, because at the bus stop across the street from CVS, that it tells you the bus is coming at this time, and there it was.
How long did it take you to get from uptown to downtown?
Oh, that was like, we jetted right down the hill.
Yeah. Oh, great. That's good. And it was you liked it? It was a good experience?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've ridden the bus. I'm not a regular bus rider, but I ride it occasionally, and I always find it like, it's a good experience.
Yeah, at one point they talked about running a streetcar right up that line, so you could have taken the streetcar ride.
Oh, we talked about
I was waiting for it. We could have, but John Kasich, former governor, pulled the $52 million for the uptown leg, and
I feel like, was he thinking that I needed to take the bus when I was leaving there? And like,
you know what? It worked just fine, didn't it? Got you to and from pretty easily, didn't it?
It totally did. And honestly,
need a streetcar.
If you're on the, no, I'm not saying that.
I'm saying that. I'm not asking you to say it.
I'm just saying that riding the bus was a good experience. And honestly, it feels like you're on the streetcar. It's not that different when you're inside of them. It's not that different.
Exactly. And guess what? That can even veer away and go other places in town too. So, but hey, what do I know?
You know, most times I walk in here, I think this isn't a day we're going to talk about the streetcars. We usually plan out the main conversations, and here we are.
It always comes back to the streetcar.
So, and then once I was down here, I think this is the more appalling thing I think people are going to think. I went to Knock Back Gnats for the very first time, which seemed like the perfect thing to do after a soccer game.
Would you call that a dive bar in a West End town?
I don't know, but the wings were delicious.
Did you know the reference? Bringing back my 80s music there.
Pet Shop Boys.
I bet Burl would know.
Oh.
Burl would know. Where's the Burl sound? Burl's a big 80s fan.
As am I.
He's going to get mad at me for saying that.
Yeah, we're just watching Stranger Things for the first time. And you know what hooked me into it? Because I'm not a big TV watcher. But somebody's like, well, the 80s music. Like, you can love that show without loving 80s music, but if you love 80s music,
you
it's
love
the
show
to watch. Yeah, like, we're kind of cruised through the first season over the weekend, and the music's glorious. You would love it. It's all 80s music.
I like Knock Back Gnats. It's hard to say sometimes. I've had some good source meetings there. It's a good place. It's a good happy hour place. That's the only time I've ever been there. I've never been at night. Actually, I have been at night. I went after some election, stopped over there, and it was packed. And
this was packed. You know, music on the jukebox. It was pointed out to me that I was a little bit outside of my comfort zone, and I thought, I go to a lot of new places because I like to try, you know, follow Polly Campbell, like what's coming and everything. But a lot of that tends to be the same type of thing, and this was definitely very different, and I had a great time.
Good. Yeah, I wouldn't think of Gnats as one of your types of places, but you know what? Then again, I would, because you are someone who adjusts wherever you are, and you adapt to people and meet people of all backgrounds and find, you know, you're really great at meeting people where they're at. So
I'm a talker.
I could totally see you doing that. I'm going to dust off an oldie here. I don't know if we've had this yet during your tenure as a co-host of the TSC, Sherry, but I got a curmudgeon moment.
I think I know where this is going, because don't forget I was a listener before I was your co-host.
I don't know if you do.
Ooh, okay.
As we record here, I just came into the booth after spending nearly an hour and a half in line at the BMV, and I'm a little tired. That's a long time to stand, and I don't really know. I don't know.
It is an old cliche, but I have to say, if I'm judging by personal experience, you know, one of our coworkers just had to go get a permit for his son, and I think his own license too. And I was looking for him for like 2 hours, and he's like, "Yeah, I was at the BMV." And then I myself, when I was getting my license renewed last fall, kind of late fall, I was in a very big hurry, and I went to three of them, and I found like 50 people in line at all of them. And so finally, I was like, I guess I have to wait in line with 50 people.
I thought, you know, going on a Tuesday late morning, sort of an off time, you would think, yeah, no. Here's probably their most curmudgeonly thing of this. So it was an hour, exactly an hour and 22 minutes to be precise, my time there. I want to say a positive thing. Everyone in line was patient, and the employees at the BMV could not have been nicer, and they were fantastic. So I want to definitely
agree with that. And I know some of them from the days when I worked in the courthouse. And I agree. Yes.
And just the patience of Job, those men and women have. Probably my most curmudgeonly aspect of this whole thing is I come back here, and we're sitting here chit-chatting about it, and it hits me that I did not buy, after an hour, almost an hour and a half in line, and I did not buy the kayak license. Son of a gun.
That is how it goes sometimes. You're going to have to go back. I mean, you don't want to be a kayak scofflaw, do you? You have to license your kayak. And I think that's kind of the thing, like if you don't license it, you're getting pulled over. I don't know actually how that works, but right, that's the point of it. You have to keep your license with you when you're kayaking. But once you get it, that's never happening. That's how it works.
No, I don't want to. I just totally forgot about it. And I will have to go back and get it because it is important. I don't want to be a scofflaw, and I don't have any intentions of doing that and taking a risk on that. If I'm going to have it, I need to have it licensed. So we will have to venture back and for another hour and 22 minutes.
You know what I think we really need to know, though? Do you like your picture?
Oh, my goodness. I had a hat on. I was sweaty. I did not like my picture. I need to shave.
Did they let you keep your hat on?
I just went in and took it off. I didn't.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's weird because mine's like a glamour shot.
You know, it's funny. But okay. You know, it's so hilarious. So it was like one of the people in front of me who went, and she was doing something to her hair while she sat in the chair, and then did a big, nice smile, was done up, and then like asked if she could look at her photo. Didn't like it, and then they retook it again, looked at it, and she seemed to be okay with it. So
wait, doesn't everybody do that? I have to say, that the last time, but this time, because there was not only 50 people in front of me, there were 50 people behind me, and I was happy with it, and I ran with it, because I feel like if I had said, ooh, could we retake that, possibly the 51st person was not going to be happy.
Let's just say I thought of you when I saw that going down, because I'm like, that Sherry would do that exact same thing. But where's this conversation going? We got to end this. Seriously, Phil. All right. What another exciting episode. Thanks for sticking with us the entire 45, 50 minutes, however long this thing's going to be. I don't keep the time. Phil does.
I mean, there is a timer in here, but I don't think either one of us pay attention to it.
I hope everyone had a wonderful 4th of July. I want to thank my neighbors for keeping the 4th of July on the 4th of July and exhausting all of their fireworks arsenal that night, because I've not heard them since. So thank you so much to all of my wonderful neighbors and neighborhood.
My favorite Twitter exchange of the week was you tweeted something grumpy about fireworks needing to end by midnight. I do think a lot of people agreed with you. I responded with Jesse Ballmer's story about how it's illegal.
Yep.
And the Cincinnati Fire Department chimed in and said, it's also dangerous.
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
Checkmate.
Was great. Thank you, Cincinnati Fire Department. And thank you, Sherry. And thank you, everyone. One more quick thing. Don't forget to get that digital subscription, Cincinnati.com. All access, 24/7. We got a great political team, government team, sports, breaking news. It's well worth whatever. I haven't even looked at our deal right now, but we're always having great deals on our subscription, so check it out. Cincinnati.com, up in the right hand corner, subscribe. It'll give you all the different options. So we'll catch you next week. Thanks again for listening, and be safe.